welcome. We are live broadcasting the entirety of the Super Smash Bros. Community. This is Beyond the Metagame. I'm your host, Peon, and this week, keeping it simple this time, I'm live from Final Destination. I am joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, AV. AV, how are you doing, big guy?
Quite distracted by the background, as usual. Barely can really look at anything with the sun directly shining in our faces. Not changing in the new game either. It's looking to be quite the distraction in the background.
Yeah, dude. What's up with that? There seems to be like, I think Sakurai is like foretelling the apocalypse. Like progressively, each Final Destination is becoming more and more disastrous.
I mean, it's like to the point where there's a legitimate metagame around choosing which Game & Watch color to play based on the stage. Like they say to pick the white Game & Watch on Final Destination so you can confuse people when the huge flash of light comes in. It's pretty insane. But why don't you like kind of bring us in on what we're gonna have today?
So today I'm honored to announce, and I'll be honest, we've already interviewed J-Tails. You know him. You love him. He's kind of the master of learning new fighting games. You probably know him from Smash. Also made his name in Dragon Ball Z Fighters as well. So we're so pleased to have him on. And we're going to be talking about how to learn a Smash game. And also, you know, just picking the brain of J-Tails. You know, he's accomplished a lot. And I think that we all can learn from some of the stuff that he's learned along the way to getting there.
Yeah, I definitely think that some of the things to look out for are watching him describe what the most important things about being good at the game are, and how he also kind of agrees with us in the fact that there's a lot of things about improvement that are just completely outside of touching a controller. There's many things that go into it that are a lot different than you might think initially.
So you can expect all that and more in just 1 second. Welcome back to Beyond the Metagame. This week, AV and I are with our special guest, J-Tails. J-Tails, it's a pleasure to have you, man.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so today's show, we're talking about, you know, how to learn a Smash Brothers game. I mean, you're kind of famous for when a game first comes out, figuring out, you know, how it works, kind of breaking it down to its simplest form and finding really effective strategies early on. So, you know, that's why we have you. We thought of no better person to bring on, man. So, pleasure.
Thank you, man. Yeah. I've, you know, been known even with like traditional fighters, like Dragon Ball Fighters. I picked it up and within a week or two, I got to reach, you know, number 3 on PC, and then I jumped on PS4 and climbed the ladder very, very quickly.
Yeah, man, that's sick. And I mean, with Smash 4 specifically, you made a lot of waves in the East. I know you took a couple of K-Tars early on. You had 13th at Apex 2015.
Yep.
And that was, I mean, people were talking like at the time, right? Like, oh, J-Tails is going to like win this whole thing. Like, I remember years before I met you, I knew you by your Diddy Kong. And
wow.
I guess my question for you is, when you first pick up a game, like, what's step one? You know, are you trying to find a character that's good, that you gel with both? You know, are you going to play all the different characters to learn out, like, what they could potentially do if you run into them in bracket? Like, what's your step one, I suppose?
Yeah, so my step one is almost always I want to put my hands on every character at least a little bit, at least 5-10 minutes. But more importantly, I want to learn all the values of, get a rough estimate of everyone's jump speed, movement speed, and like relative damage, like off their throws, off their tilts and their smashes, stuff like that.
Yeah, okay, that's really interesting. So you're all about kind of the data and basically the numbers behind the game rather than how the character plays at the very beginning.
Yeah, I try to, and anything that sticks out to me, like, wow, that move has a lot of knockback, holy crap, or like, wow, this character can combo off of three different setups, whereas most characters that I've touched can only combo off of one thing in their arsenal. And like that, I start putting the pieces together to formulate like what's strong and what's not strong in the context of the game.
I think that's really I think it's really interesting that kind of plays into something that's really important about kind of looking at the framework of the game and the fundamentals rather than kind of looking at every character's like specific bread and butters or specific mechanics behind every character.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not talking about frame data either. I'm just talking about like the values that anyone can see using their own eyes.
Yeah, that's that makes a lot of sense. I think something that kind of naturally leads into this, like how do you decide which character to kind of like gravitate toward, or how do you decide which character to settle with, or the set of characters that you're more comfortable with?
Yeah, that's a good question. So now we're talking about you know, kind of like personal preference and like your play style. So I've had previous experience with other Smash games, so I already know what kinds of characters I have an affinity towards. So I kind of will separate, you know, characters of interest into two pools, which are characters that I think are strong and then characters that I think I'm good with. And I try to find the ones that overlap and who, you know, that are in the center circle in the Venn diagram, basically.
Oh yeah, I mean that makes a lot of sense. Now, to kind of along the same lines, as you're learning information about the characters, right, and what they can do, what specific options they have, and which ones you're very capable of utilizing, how do you approach learning kind of like the meta aspects of the game? So looking at like say Smash 4. A huge part of the meta ended up being, you know, ledge trapping, you know, and setting up kill confirms, and you know, very neutral kind of footsies focused. Like, you know, when you're first playing the game, are you trying to scout out like, okay, how is this game meant to be played at the highest level, you know, and how do you get there on a mechanics basis?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. So while, you know, so there's a lot going on at the start of a game, and you know, we talked about kind of like the character frontier of that aspect, but then there is also the, you know, general game mechanic and game sense aspect. And yeah, one of the questions I do ask myself is, how should the game be played? What is the optimal way to play the game? Stuff like that, like what are some of the best options? So for like one brief example from like Smash 4 is like ledge trapping and ledge options. I just noticed that I was getting hit when I would like try to recover from the ledge. So what I did was I actually went into training mode and set it to 1/4 speed so that you can hold L to kind of like move the, you know, pause and unpause the game. And I just chose different ledge options and saw when their invincibility ran out or like how long, you know, certain options lasted. And from there, you can kind of get a sense of which options are good, which options are, you know, not so good. But to jump back to the other train of thought, which, you know, how should this game be played? You definitely want to consider a flowchart for whatever game that you're playing, you know. And in Smash 4, it's, you know, play neutral, try to get your opponent in disadvantage, get, you know, disadvantage being off stage on the ledge or above you, and once they're at kill percent, hit them with a kill move or a move that, you know is going to kill at a certain percent, unstaled.
Man, right? That's so cool, man. The thought of you just in, you know, day zero of the game, you know, figuring out with a slow motion frame by frame, like intangibility analysis, like, you know what, like this looks like to be a huge thing I should push and I should develop in the meta. That's inspiring, man. I hope to be doing the same kind of shenanigans in Ultimate, man. Sick.
Thank you, man. Yeah. I think, yeah, no, Ultimates are going to be a great opportunity for everyone to kind of start fresh and to, you know, learn together. And I think it's going to be really fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead, Abby.
Okay. Yeah. I was just going to kind of jump off of that and just ask you, like, what are your goals for Smash Ultimate? And maybe as like a side question, who's your most anticipated newcomer?
Very good questions. Part way in between Smash 4, I reached a point where I was doing very, very well for myself. But I also had a lot going on in my life. I was in graduate school and I was working. And a lot of these things got in my way, right? But with the announcement of Smash Ultimate and us having this, you know, generous time span to prepare, I'm trying to arrange my life in a way that I don't have to worry about, you know, extraneous things, just, you know, try and set aside the most time for the game. That being said, I do want to be one of the best players in Ultimate, as much as I can continue to get consistent practice.
Awesome, man. To follow up on Abby's question, are you going to stay Diddy Kong? Is there any character that you've seen from the footage or based on what you speculate the meta of the new game to play like? Is there any character that you think might fit your playstyle?
Well, I did play a lot of Snake in Brawl. So Abby, to answer your other question, if you would consider Snake a newcomer, I'm very, very excited for him. I have high hopes for him. Yeah. I think that my previous experience with Snake and also just being good with like item characters is going to lend itself to playing him pretty well at the start.
Well, Jay does. He does have a new ass, so we'll count it.
Yeah, with one that I'm not excited about.
It's a damn shame.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's really cool. I can definitely see, like, especially with the item play crossover and kind of like the really intricate, like, things that the intricate way that Snake played in Brawl, that it would be a really interesting character to watch you play. I'm definitely really excited for that. So we kind of touched on basically what your expectations in terms of, like, you want to be like the best in Ultimate. I mean, we've seen you kind of do this in other fighters, notably recently Dragon Ball FighterZ. Kind of to backtrack a little, how did you deal with expectations in kind of the beginning in the mid era of Smash 4? I mean, you were definitely considered a very strong player and you were at the top at the beginning, and you are definitely, well, by far the best player in the Central Coast. I just want to know, how do you deal with these expectations and how do you kind of learn and build from them?
Yeah, another really great question. So at the start of the game, I, you know, obviously have my expectations, right? However, at the start of a game, the way that I push myself is different from in the mid game. And what I mean by that is, at the start of a game, nobody knows anything. At the start of a game, you know, there shouldn't really, you know, not to say that don't have goals for yourself, but you can't be too stern on your expectations, because you're going to run into things that you've never seen before. You're going to fight a newcomer that you've never fought before. And, you know, like, so you can't hold yourself too high to a standard. So what I do at the start of games is, I'm actually not too hard on myself. When I lose, I'm happy about losing. Well, not so much because of the loss, but just like, wow, the reason I lost is because of this, and now I gain more information that I didn't know prior to coming to this tournament. And I write it down and I internalize it. And then I set out a goal to not lose to that same strategy or that same character again. And to kind of just like cement the holes in my gameplay. And that, to me, is the most fun part about the early game.
That's so cool. I mean, is it hard, I suppose, to shelve your pride into, you know, there's a lot of Smash 4 players whose Smash Ultimate's going to be like their first competitive sequel, right? Yeah. A lot of, you know, so is it going to be hard for a lot of these players to say, hey, you know, I was good in Smash 4 doesn't mean I'm going to be good in Ultimate, you know? So how do you, as someone who was very established in Brawl and PM, to go into Smash 4 and be like, you know, this is ground zero, this is day one. I need to just, you know, eat some humble pie. What's that process like?
Yeah, I mean, I just pretend it's a new game. For example, Dragon Earth Moon Fighter 2000 is coming out next week. What are you gonna do, Dane? are you expecting to be the best?
I guess not.
Yeah, so like I consider it, I just don't even pretend it's a Smash game. It's just a game that I want to get good at. And for me to have pride at the start makes zero sense. Yeah. That hinders the learning process.
Fair enough. I mean, but to be fair, J-Dales, I was not very good at Dragon Earth Moon Fighter 1. So
have you watched my videos?
You know, J-Dales, I've watched a lot of videos, but I haven't watched that one. I'm sorry.
Damn it, dude. Put a lot of time into those.
I'm sorry. Wait, can you plug it real quick? Plug the video. I'll watch it right after this interview. What video should they watch, J-Dales? Yeah, go check them out. We got them here. Is it youtube.com/JTales, by the way?
YouTube.com/C/JTales.
Okay.
Type it out for you guys.
All right. Yeah, well, it'll definitely be in the show notes regardless. So.
All right. Yeah. Kind of like jumping off from there. I know you were talking about like the fact that you're just like treating it like a completely new game. But I mean, it's kind of assumed that some skills are going to cross over between the two. And a lot of people say that we'll see like a lot of Twitter posts. I've seen a lot of pro players say this. They're like, don't stop practicing Smash 4 because you're going to have to keep your fundamentals. And the thing is, fundamentals are such like a vague thing. Like it's like when someone says fundamentals, it's very hard to kind of condense. Having said that, I'm going to ask you to condense it into like three things. Like what are three things that people should look out for in like kind of moving from Smash 4 to Ultimate?
Sure. So, I mean, obviously, well, separate from fundamentals are matchups, right? But I consider fundamentals to be movement, spacing, right? So knowing the range of all your moves and obviously not spacing within, like, you know, getting punished or getting shield grabbed range, knowing what's safe and what's unsafe so that you can prioritize your move selection and not, you know, do unsafe moves unless you know there's a good risk reward. Recovering fundamentals is something that's hard to conceptualize, but to me it kind of means like spacing, patience, and understanding your moves and your distances as well as that of the opponent.
Yeah, definitely. So
footsies is a word that we hear a lot too. Right.
Wait, can I piggyback off this real quick, Abby? A lot of people talk about fundamentals, you know, and like you mentioned, mechanical fundamentals, spacing, you know, advantage state, disadvantage state, kind of the bread and butter of what it takes to play Smash at a competitive level. I want you to talk about, you know, how do you define fundamentals of being a competitor, not necessarily in game, but in terms of practicing good practice habits and practicing, you know, how to prepare and how to learn a matchup, stuff like that. Like how important do you think those kind of meta elements are to being a competitive Smash player?
Oh yeah. I mean, that ties into, you know, work ethic and kind of like one of the biggest things that I think separates competitors that really, you know, kind of like skyrocket in progress is two things. Learning how to learn and knowing yourself really well. And what I mean by those two things is if you kind of learn how to learn, you can figure out what it is that you don't know. You can lose a set and then say, oh yeah, you know, I used my recovery a bit too low there and I got gimped. That happens to me every time. I need to start working on a different route with my recovery so that doesn't happen anymore, and kind of like self-correction. Or, oh man, I staled my kill move and he lived till 160 and now I'm dead, you know? And so I need to work on more efficient ways to close out the stock, right? And that's figuring out where, you know, where your weaknesses are and what it is that you don't know. And then the second part of that is knowing yourself, you know, knowing how your mind works and kind of like what frustrates you, knowing how to keep cool, knowing how much sleep you need, knowing how much food you need to eat or not to eat, because some people play worse on a full stomach, right? There's a lot of outside things that are also very important to the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we like to hear. I mean, basically our podcast is about like beyond the meta game. Like we're looking.
Gotcha.
That's exactly what we like to hear. I think we've stressed a lot that food, exercise, and especially I love what the thing that you discussed about knowing yourself. Introspecting is something that we've discussed before. Yeah. And I think introspection is absolutely, and basically understanding yourself is absolutely what leads to you being the best player that you can be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think there's like a lot of people that don't really grasp this as well. And what is some, like, basically, I know you basically just talked about eating habits and kind of knowing yourself outside of the game. What's something that you think that people don't do as much, like that's completely irrelevant of Smash, that hinders their kind of the way that they progress in their region or the way that they progress competitively? Like what's one thing that people may not know that's hurting them?
I think that one big thing, well, two things actually. One big thing is, after a loss, people can get very frustrated, right? And people can either leave the venue and just go home, or just kind of like mope around in the corner and, you know, not practice or not watch grand finals or not watch winners, not watching the opponent that just beat them beat other people, right? A lot of people just kind of like, oh, I lost, I'm out. All right, let me just, you know, go to the corner or let me go home or go eat, which is fine, right? But there's a lot of value in like losing to someone and then following them around and seeing how they do in their next match and be like, wow, and he beat this player too. And oh man, or someone that uses the same character as you and that's still in bracket and watching all their matches live and then asking them questions afterwards. There's a lot of the social aspect that people just simply don't do.
I love that. It's pretty much just one additional step of, you know, and I think what that takes is a certain level of positivity, a certain level of understanding that Smash is a long-term investment. You know, you're not going to get better after one tournament. It's a continual process, and the more you enable yourself to be open-minded, to learn, to be humble in defeat, and to be a tenacious learner. You know, it's not about how good you are; it's about how fast you learn, right? It's how fast you improve.
Yeah. And the second part of your question, Avi, I think that another thing that people don't do more of that they should is work on their weaknesses. So you'll see people get together for Smash Fest and practice sessions and just kind of like play for like 5-6 hours and get burnt out by the third hour. And then you're kind of just like choosing random characters and playing different game modes. And I'm not saying don't have fun with your friends. Absolutely have fun with your friends. But there should be a time for practice and a time for fun. But to go further into that, a lot of people don't spend time like working on the things that they need to. Like I can go to a local, doesn't matter where, in New York, in Central Coast, anywhere, and I can visually see when I fight players, the players that make the same mistakes week after week after week, and then the players that correct their behavior and like their results are showing improvement, their gameplay is showing improvement, they're like just really on the come up. And those are two, you know, different things. So like, and just a brief like example in game is like punishing like forward get up from the ledge, which you have like two frames to do that. And a lot of people still mess up the timing, right? But that's something that if you rehearse it, you should have it 100% down. There's no excuse for it for you to mess that up, right?
Right.
But yeah. If you're just playing friendlies and not focusing on learning how to punish that option, then what did you really accomplish in playing the friendlies for 3 hours?
Yeah, that's so huge. Like I basically here at Beyond the Metagame, I think something that we've also wanted to get into is basically working smarter, not working harder. I think one thing that's really important to talk about is that which you've really done a good job of summing up is the idea of mindlessly grinding at the game, putting in a lot of time, putting in like, you're going to be playing for 3-4 hours, and then you feel like you should be getting better. You feel like because your brain thought that you put in the time, it's like you think you should go to the basically your next event and do better. But yeah, it's like a lot of the time that's not the case because you're not working on really small things. You're not working on things that you should have down that is just purely mechanical.
Yeah, I think there's a huge distinction to draw between JTales. Earlier you were getting at when you first play a game, it's really important to you to understand kind of the values of how fast people fall and where people's jumps take them, and just kind of understanding how the game all fits together, and that really deep intuitive sense to where you can predict and understand what's going to happen at any given moment. You know, there's a huge distinction between playing to get all that information and soak it up like a sponge and playing to actively fix your mistakes and to actively modify your play, and tweak it and improve it. And, one takes serious conscious effort, and I really appreciate you bringing that up. But I do want to shift gears. Sure. Let's say, we want your counsel on this. Let's say you have reached your goals, and maybe your goal is to be the number one Shulk on Wi-Fi in Smash Ultimate or something, right?
Sure.
Right, and you've got there. You're there. You got your Monados, your shirt's off, how do you stay motivated once you're at that point? Once you've reached that goal, how do you still push yourself to improve once you've reached like your ultimate goal? No pun intended.
Nice. I think part of that comes from, people's purpose and their reason for playing, right? A lot of people play for different reasons. Some people play for friends. Some people, they just want to try their hand at competition and it's fun. Some people want to be the best with character X or character Y, right? And then some people want to, just be the best player hands down, number one on the PGR or whatever it may be, right? So a lot of it has to do with, personality types and what your purpose for playing is, because if you're just playing for friends and you happen to be the number one Shulk on Wi-Fi, you might not want to push really, pass further than that. But, I don't know, man, for me personally, I just always will set my sights higher and higher and higher. And once I climb the mountain, I'm just looking at the next mountain I could be climbing. That's just how my mind works. So as for what advice could I give for that? You just have to really want more for yourself. That's really all there is to it.
I like it. I think that's a completely fair answer.
Yeah, I think that's a, it seems obvious, but there is really no other strong answer to that question.
Yeah.
You can't, if you,
it's not for everyone either. Exactly. And that's important to recognize too.
Yeah. I mean, if basically there's a reason that there's a huge disparity between the top, of any kind of sport, art, all of these performance, based, all these these performance-based arts and sports are very, very bottom mid heavy.
Yeah.
And obviously there can only be so many people at the top. But yeah, being able to just constantly not be satiated and constantly setting goals for yourself is really important.
Yeah, I guess until you're zero, right, and you're 4 times PGR, and
yeah.
At that point when he retired, I think everybody was there is no more mountain to climb, and you're on the top of Everest. You brought your ladder to the top. and you're standing on your tippy toes, I mean, there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah, I mean, aside from shattering Zero's record, right? That's a goal.
Yeah, true. I guess a 5-time PGR, then you could fly to the Bahamas. 52
tournaments in a row. Like, all right, well, I'm going to try and win 53.
That's right.
Yeah.
Buy 2 scarves.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's mean, that's just overall a pretty touchy topic sometimes too. I mean, a lot of, because how do you tell people, how do you like tell someone that's really motivated in the game, like there's a huge chance that you're actually not going to reach these lofty goals that you've set for yourself, especially when, I mean, yeah, let's talk about like Shulk player 56, who finally like became like the king of like Wi-Fi Shulk.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Shulk, you're just kind of limited as a character. Obviously, we've seen Nico's like really, really strong play, but maybe I think Kakome is the other strong Shulk player from Japan, but it's very obvious that Shulk is just does not have as many tools as some of the top tier characters. Where do you stand on, in terms of, if you want to be the best, are you and you want to play basically a character that's not considered very good, where do you stand on that? Are you actually trying to be the best if you're not playing a top tier character?
Well, I think that everyone should give their run of the mill try, right? And I think a really shining example here is Tweak with Bowser Jr., right? He was always a very, very strong player, and he committed, I want to say, 2 years to Bowser Jr., maybe a year and a half, right? And the results just weren't there. But he was widely considered the best Bowser Jr. player, hands down, right? And now we see Tweak today, after picking up Cloud, Bayonetta, and his infamous Donkey Kong, you know, taking tournament after tournament, number 2 on the PGR, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, even MKLeo, right? Primarily, well, used to be Marth Meta Knight, now kind of like Cloud Bayo. And we don't really see the Marth Meta Knight as often, only when warranted. So, yeah, I mean, you know, give it a shot with your... My stance on it is, it really depends on what you want, you know? Because some people will say, I want to be the best, but I want to do it with Pac-Man, right? And that's what Sinji tells me all the time. And I'm like... Well, you know, give it your shot, right? And he got 13th at Smash Con, and he's been doing pretty well for himself. But it just really comes down to the person, right? And sometimes you'll get tired of it and say, all right, well, Pac-Man's holding me back. I've reached the point in my skill where this character's holding me back. I'm not the one holding back the character anymore. And now I need another character that's going to actually give me the options to reflect my true skill. So that's kind of my stance on it. If you really want it, you know, go for it. If you want to try with your mid or low tier, by all means, go for it. But you know, at some point you can't really cry later on. I think it's unfair for you to then cry and complain afterwards.
Right. I can definitely vibe with a lot of the points that you brought up, because there's a lot of people who, not saying that you shouldn't kind of pursue like greatness with the character, maybe a character that you very like, that you resonate with and you love.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that always kind of complain about their character not giving them the results that they want, and they kind of use that
as a crutch.
Exactly.
To then not, you know, improve themselves, or to fall back on when they lose. Well, my character is just bad. So then they, you know, kind of like feel better, they cushion the loss, and they don't actually reflect upon themselves. But can I just make one more point that's, I think, really helpful?
Please.
So I think that for some players, like, for example, I started off as a Ness main in Brawl for 2 years straight, right? And then I picked up Diddy, and then I eventually picked up Meta Knight. And once I picked up Meta Knight, I placed 25th at Apex, 17th at Apex, multiple major stuff like that, right? So I do think that there's a lot of value in playing characters with limited tools, because it forces you to be better than, you know, your higher tier counterparts or your higher tier peers at the time. And it kind of like teaches you fundamentals that you need to have in order to be successful with low tiers. So then when you move, oh, and conversely, I think that if you start a game with like just a top tier, just boom, top tier, you can potentially miss out on a lot of fundamentals that you're not being forced to use because you have all the options to your disposal. So you wouldn't even, you know, that wouldn't even cross your mind to, you know, yeah, space properly or to, you know, whatever, whatever. So I think there's some value in playing lower tier characters for a while and then switching to a higher tier. I'm not saying anything negative about it.
Yeah, well, you can definitely see the, you know, that like you mentioned, there are some pros to it. There are some pros to coming from the humble beginnings. You know, you learn some stuff. It's like, you know, you if you're born and raised in the streets, you know, you have a chip on your shoulder. Maybe you're going to be grinding a little bit harder than your pampered peers. You know, you got a little bit more context. Yeah, but I completely really appreciate everything you said on that matter. It's a lot of good insight. But again, to shift gears, there's been a lot of, you know, discussion around Ultimate coming out, and I wasn't around for the start of Smash 4. I was not a Brawl veteran, so I don't know if this is par for the course or what. So there's a lot of culture. The culture as is right now is a lot of people are using Ultimate as kind of this second lease on life. You know, people that are discouraged with Smash 4 and kind of treating Smash 4 as this toxic relationship. They're kind of waiting for their savior, Smash Ultimate, to come out, you know, and people who are disappointed with the results now are kind of looking at Ultimate as like the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, as the promised land. You know, what do you think about you viewing Ultimate through that lens?
Sure. Well, I really do think it depends on the person who's doing the viewing, because I think that you can see it through that lens, but also be realistic. I have high hopes for Ultimate, and I do think that it'll solve a lot of the over-centralization of the meta that's currently going on, which I think is great. It opens the doors for people trying out new characters, just tons of character and stage diversity, making the game exciting for both players and spectators, stuff like that. I know other people are looking at it as, you know, through a rose-colored lens, and they're just like, all right, well, you know, these characters are getting nerfed, so then I'm going to be really good in the next installment. And I think that that's also the wrong way to think about it, because we don't know anything about the new game, or we know very little, right? And to think that your problem matchups being slightly nerfed is going to solve your problems with work ethic and fundamentals and growth is ignorant thinking.
Yeah, all right. Definitely. I think that's pretty much exactly the answer that kind of vibed with us when we were kind of discussing this between ourselves. And I think it's really good to kind of go into to Smash Ultimate, yeah, with like some hopeful thoughts. It's really, it's obviously it does give like a really cool stage to make a different, maybe to change things up, make a different name for yourself, and be at the ground floor of something that's really big. However, yes, it will not solve any previous work ethic.
It's a clean slate, so you're gonna start from the bottom. And you know, if you weren't like a hard worker or a fast learner or, you know, whatever the case may be, those, you know, mindset issues, whatever the case may be, isn't gonna be solved, but it is gonna be refreshing to play a new Smash game.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's about all that we have for today. Dane, do you want to say some closing words?
Yeah, so first of all, JTales, it was so fun having you on, man. Your insight is boundless. definitely appreciate everything you had to say, and you're definitely a friend of the show, you know. As we grow, one day when you look back and say, you know, I was there at the start, you know, you'll definitely be on our wall of fame for sure.
Thank you, man. Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to bring me on, and I love the questions. I thought they were very well thought out, and I hope that the, you know, the discourse that we had today is helpful to whoever is listening. And yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun. These are the kinds of things that I love talking about. I could talk about this stuff for hours.
Well, we'll have to have you on again sometime in that case.
Definitely.
Because that's what this show is. that's why we so naturally thought of you. We're like, I was, you know, J-Tales. It was automatic. But
thank you,
man. Where can people find you? I mean, they probably already know, but tell them anyway.
Yeah. On Twitter, you could probably just search J-Tales, JTAILS, or J1Tales, which is the actual Twitter handle. J-Tales was taken. And then on YouTube, you can just type in J-Tales into YouTube and my video should come up. Yeah.
All right, J-Tales. Thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
There you have it, guys. That was our interview with J-Tales, and I personally loved it. I mean, I thought he'd be the perfect guy to bring you on to talk about what we talked about, and I was right, man. That was so good to have his insight. I mean, what do you think? Like, after talking to him, you know, what do you think about what we just discussed?
I think it vibed really well. I'm really happy with the direction the conversation went, because it seemed to always come back to the fact that, yes, there is something outside of just practicing the game, practicing my tech, and like kind of playing friendlies, that in improving at the game. And I really want to stress over and over again, work ethic does not come easily. Work ethic is not something that you can grind, is something that you can basically brute force. It's something that's a really nuanced, introspective process that you'll likely be improving on and iterating on for the rest of your life.
Right. One thing that really stuck with me was J-Tales talking about like learning how to learn, you know, and it was so cool and comforting to see how much of an emphasis he placed on your general approach to approaching the game. You know, it was very meta, the meta, you know, it's very much in alignment with what we set out to discuss. And it comforted me knowing that someone who's achieved the stuff he's done, you know, taking tournaments over Nairo into Buzz and Smash 4, and to see how much of an emphasis he places on breaking down his own learning process.
Yeah, definitely. I think we hit a lot of really good points there. It like vibed really well with kind of our mentalities on the game. I think we had some really nice discussions on culture, being setting good expectations, something that also ties really well into kind of addressing people's mentality and kind of making sure that you stay at the top of your mental game, as well as the top of your the top peak of your in-game performance.
Yeah, so this has been Beyond the Metagame. You can find us, of course, on Twitter at Beyond Metagame. Twitter didn't quite have room for the, so it's just Beyond Metagame. My Twitter is peon_GCE. That's Golf Charlie Echo for all you military folk. AV, where can people find you, my friend?
People can find me at A and then my really long Indian last name. I have to keep saying this because no one's gonna remember Vaidyanatha, but you can find it on our website and our podcast description. We'll be making sure that you can reach us. And I think something that I think we've talked about and that we want to continue doing is kind of getting questions from people on our Twitter. We really want to hear about what you guys have to say, and we want to kind of be able to answer some of your guys' most burning questions, that so we can provide some insight and analysis to basically help both you and us develop our show.
Yeah, maybe this is a shot in the dark, but you know, we definitely are going to have guests in the future akin to JTales, you know, other Smash personalities, other people that are specialists at what we're also interested in. And yeah, if you or someone that you think is qualified that you know want to be interviewed on the show, you know, reach out to us, tweet at us. We're not going to guarantee we'll say yes to everybody, but we're definitely want to have more people on the show in the future, right, AB?
Definitely. And I think that we're off to a great start, and I think this is definitely the right direction for where we want to go.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate you. It's a pleasure talking to you guys each and every week, and you have a lot to look forward to in the future. See ya.